Hey, everybody, thanks so much for downloading the podcast this week. We are going to be diving deep into this movie. We're going to be going through the ins and outs, and we're going to be talking about the end of it, who dies, who doesn't die, and it's going to be a big spoiler-filled podcast here. So if you haven't seen John Wick, I highly recommend that you go watch this movie before tuning into our thoughts. Coming up, we are finally diving headfirst into the action territory this week. I am joined by fellow IU students Ben Chalix and Kyle Backus, and today we are talking about the adrenaline-filled, action-packed blockbuster about a hitman who was forced out of retirement after a deadly encounter with the son of a high-profile Russian mobster. What this young thug doesn't know is that he has just forced the world's most deadly assassin back into the game. Now he is on a rage-filled hunt for revenge and will stop at nothing to get back at the one who took everything from him. I'm, of course, talking about the man who once killed three men in a bar with a pencil. The one that you send to kill the boogeyman, Baba Yaga himself, John Wick. That's coming up next on the Cinemaniacs. Hello, everybody, and welcome to the Cinemaniacs, the show for the maniacs for cinema. I am your host, Jack Lindner, and with me today are my fellow Continental Assassins, Ben Chalix and Kyle Backus. Ben, Kyle, how are you guys?
Doing pretty all right. How about you?
Doing good, man.
Yeah, it could be a bit warmer, but doing pretty well. It's a little cold today.
Exactly. It's kind of been going back and forth, honestly.
Yeah. That's it. Indiana weather for you.
I know, yeah. All right, well, first off, before we get into this movie, how the hell is this movie already 8 years old? Almost 8 years old.
This is actually shocking.
Oh, my God.
Crazy. Yeah, it came out 2014, so almost 8 years old, and It's freaking crazy to me. It's unbelievable. Like, it literally still feels like this movie came out yesterday. I mean, how do you guys feel about that?
Yeah, the whole aging thing with, like, you get older, time seems to move faster. Like, as I get older, I'm like, wow, this is becoming more and more true for me.
Exactly.
I guess that kind of is what makes, like, a really good movie versus just, like, a good movie. Because, you know, some of the later Transformers movies, which are pretty bad, they probably came out, like, 8 years ago.
Oh, my gosh, yeah.
But that, you can tell. When you watch those, like, you're like, that's 8 years ago. That's 10 years ago.
Yeah.
But this, I mean, no. I would have thought, like, five maximum.
Like Keanu Reeves himself, it's timeless.
Right? Yes.
I mean,
yes,
it's absolutely crazy. I mean, but yeah. So moving into the plot a little bit about this movie. Honestly, when I first heard it, I want to hear what you guys think. But I mean, on paper, this movie's plot is probably one of the strangest and honestly probably one of the dumbest plots that I've ever heard for an action movie. But it's executed so well, despite all of, like, the weird things that it sounds like, you know? Because, like, when I first watched the trailer and I see, you know, John Wick, he's hanging out, and you see, like, what the consequences are after that first attack. His dog dies, and he's getting revenge for his dog? Like, what? Like, on paper, it doesn't sound right. Like, what do you guys think about that?
Right. Just the whole dog thing, when it first came out, I felt like was like a – there was no context to it. So it's like, here's this guy. I mean, maybe he's a real animal lover, you know? He's like dogs, you know, birds, squirrels, you know, just any animal that dies, it's like, there goes your head kind of thing.
Exactly. So. Like, that's kind of how I thought it was at first, you know? Kyle, how about you?
Yeah, I mean, like, nowadays, films are kind of – there's kind of like a formula, like there's formulaic. I mean, you know, all the Marvel movies are kind of the same. That's not necessarily a bad thing. It works. But I think in order to differ themselves from a lot of that formula, they had to dumb it down a little bit. I mean, Sometimes the plot can be a little dumber if the execution is so well done like it was in this one.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah. I mean, like I've been saying, it was so – on paper, it sounds like such a strange idea that he's going out to get revenge on this Russian mobster after he kills his dog. But, like, once you see the context behind it and you see what the dog meant to him, you know, then it becomes so much more, you know. Like, first time I'm watching that movie, the first 10 minutes, it has me nearly in tears just because I'm like, oh, God, now I understand.
And that's when you – right there is when you get so hooked on it.
Exactly.
Like the intro, I feel, is just – it's really short, but it's, like, so all-encompassing that you can kind of get the scope of this character just from, like, the first sort of the break-in and then – the dog scene. Like, you're just kind of thrown, you get a little context of it.
Definitely.
And then, like, you're thrown into it. And then as soon as the dog dies, you're like, oh my God, there goes my heart.
Exactly. Like, and I'm as big of a dog lover as the next person. I mean, I absolutely love dogs. And so, I mean, it was, yeah. And so when you see that happen, and then that's when you're just like, yeah, you need to go fuck these guys up.
Yeah. And also, like, I think part of the simpleness of the log line is what attracts you initially. But, you know, the movie is not that simple. It's not just some dog, you know, and then he goes and kills. Like, the simpleness, like you said, on paper, it brings you in, and then you're like, okay, I'm in. You know,
yeah.
like you were just saying, yeah. Ben, it takes 5 minutes for you to just get completely enthralled.
Exactly. I'm glad you brought that up, though, because on paper it seems like such a simple movie, but then when you actually watch it, there are so many elements to this movie that are so complex. They literally introduce an entire world in this movie. And it just baffles me every single time I watch it because they do so much with so little. And I think it's great. I mean, what do you guys think?
Yeah. Sorry. I think one of the best parts of it is that it doesn't feel the need to just completely establish the world. Like, once again, on the Marvel movies, what we're now, like, on our third different iteration of Spider-Man.
Yeah.
And almost every single one, same with Batman, almost every single one, they show, like, Spider-Man's uncle or, like, Batman's parents dying. They feel the need
great
to...
Great power comes great responsibility.
That's pretty good. They feel the need to just, you know, every single time, bring it from the bottom or from the ground up, even though we all know that. This one doesn't, even though we've never heard their story before, it doesn't feel the need to do that. It establishes a universe and tells you just enough of what you need to know before it jumps right into what's happening here and now.
Definitely. Definitely. Ben, how about you?
No, you know, again, with the world building thing, I think they do such a good job of just in the first beginning of it with the setting. Like, they, again, John Wick's house is kind of the main sort of beginning of it where the, of course, where he lives and they break in, they kill the dog, and then all the lovely scene of him, like, menacingly going down the stairs with a sledgehammer, unearthing his past in a metaphorical kind of way. And then it's just, like, a bunch of guns, and you're just like, yeah, kick ass kind of thing. But just the kind of the people, too. Like, and I don't want to jump too far ahead in the movie, of course, but after after they all attack, a police officer shows up on a noise complaint.
Yeah.
And the police officer knocks on the door, and John Wick, with, like, blood on his face, you know, like, panting because he just murdered, like, 30 men.
Yeah.
The policeman says, are you working again?
No, just sorting some stuff out.
Yeah. And so in that sense, it's, like, such a good world-building way because you can, like, it's just so subtle and such, like, a one-line thing that you can be like, okay, so the police understand who this guy is and what he is capable of and how little they can do about it.
Yeah.
Like I have to think, like, he's a dragon in his kind of cave at the house, at least. So the police officer was like, have a good night, sir.
I love that. I love that you brought that up, though, because it's such a – it does – like we've been saying, it does so much with so little, you know. It doesn't – the dialogue in this movie doesn't have to, like, go above and beyond. It's like, oh – like, the cop doesn't have to go back to his chief and be like, oh, you know, we don't mess with John Wick, you know? Mm-hmm. Like, just that one interaction, you know, it's like, okay, there's this unspoken agreement that we're not going to fuck with this guy because he can murder us all, you know?
I was actually thinking about this before the show, is that, like, my thought of John Wick in this one was that he's a ruthless, you know, merciless, terrifying killer. But he's, like, not that bad of a dude. You know, I think that's what is really, really well done, is that it's separating him from the killer, and it does that immediately by showing him retired. You know, he's trying to be an individual. And I would almost even take that interaction with the police as, they could be scared of him and they could realize what he could do. But also, he may not be that bad of a dude. And besides his homicides, he may, you know, give back to the community and he may, you know, do all these positive things, right?
I mean, it's such a stark contrast between his life as an assassin and his life at home. You know, he wants to keep that life at home. And so it's just, I totally agree with you. It's such a stark contrast between both those lives, you know, and Keanu Reeves does an incredible job with this, I think. So, but going into it a little bit more, you know, the great thing about the plot, even though it may seem a little bit silly on paper, though, it has such a great emotional impact for the protagonist because we've all seen those action movies where it's like, you know, this guy couldn't save someone, and so he tries to save this other person in order to, like, make up for that, you know? Mm-hmm. Like, if he saves the second person, they basically get that closure, you know, by saving, not being able to save that first person, you know? And that's exactly what this movie is, except it flips it on its head a little bit. Instead of saving people, John Wick is trying to avenge people.
Right.
Like, for his wife, he can't do anything about it. He has no one to blame for his wife's death. He couldn't prevent it, you know, and there was nothing he can do to avenge her in any way, you know. But with this dog and with Daisy, the dog, because the mobsters, you know, they kill the dog by doing this, by avenging Daisy's death, you know, it's like that same exact kind of story. You know, he avenges the dog's death. He's also avenging his wife's death. You know, that's just something that I thought about, you know. Well, what do you guys think?
You know, you mentioned absolutely that's a real, like, with the dog being named Daisy is also the theme of daisies is actually seen quite a few times in the movie. It's a little fun fact. If you pay attention, they show a little beginning of this, him like kissing his wife on the deathbed, which is just so sad.
Oh my God.
But in the background, there are daisies.
I didn't notice
that. Yeah, there are flowers that are daisies in the background. And then also a couple of pieces of jewelry that he's holding on to kind of in the beginning. Again, that sort of like daisy theme. And the daisy sort of represents his dead wife. And then the dog, of course, with the name as well. And then as he loses that, he loses, again, more of Daisy. Not that that's necessarily his wife's name, but
no,
still.
No. But yeah. And I mean, it reminds me, yeah, like when he's opening the letter, you know, and he sees the dog's collar and the name tag and he goes, Daisy, of course, you know. It's so, yeah, it is a repeating theme throughout, you know. I mean, Kyle, what do you think?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's different than other just like bland action movies where a lot of those are just getting revenge, quote unquote, just kind of going through shooting up a hall of bad guys, whatever. And this does feel different. Like you use the word avenge rather than like revenge. Because it does feel like he's trying to, like, right or wrong more than just, oh, I'm going to kill these guys because, you know, they did X, Y, and Z.
Yeah.
So it is certainly, like, the crux of his, like, motivation is a little more complex than, like, a movie that may compare itself to John Wick.
Definitely, yeah. And, I mean, we've talked a little bit about this, you know, just with the blend of reality and fantasy with this movie is so – it's absolutely amazing to me how well this movie is able to combine both realistic and – fantastic elements into it, you know, because like when you think about it, you know, when you first watch it, this world seems so real. It's like, oh yeah, there could be this league of underground assassins, right. You know, everywhere and wherever you turn, you know, but the more you think about it, it's absolutely ridiculous, you know, like that's the fantastical part about it. And I think it's so, so good because then once you get to the fighting, then it blends that realism. The fighting in this movie is so real and it's just so hardcore. I mean, what do you guys think about that?
Yeah, that's actually like one of my least favorite critiques about this movie is that they say like, you know, like, oh, no person will be able to like kill that many people or like dodge that many bullets or be so aware. But never once in the film does it establish that it is in, you know, our planet, our universe. Like people like to think that it's taking place in our New York City or whatever. Yeah. And it's not. You're right. There's a lot of fantastical elements. A lot of these things would never happen, but happening in this universe, in John Wick's universe,
yeah.
Like the hotel, you know, that would never.
Yeah, with like all the pool scenes and stuff like that.
That would never be allowed. Like, but it works so well in this. It's a perfect blend.
Yeah.
It's like a universe B if ours is A. You know, it's like just the next one over.
Definitely.
You know, and also, you know, a big part of that I think is thanks to Keanu Reeves and a little behind the scenes action was he went through a lot of training.
Oh yeah.
And there are videos on the internet of him like. Just at the gun range, just using a weapon so effectively just because he put so much work into that kind of acting role. And it translates to the screen.
Absolutely.
Because you could see the realism of his fighting styles and also the continuity through and through. Like there's a great scene where he's again fighting and at one point he has to reload. And so they don't make it fantasy like he has infinite bullets. Like they pause and they show him like click the cartridge out, take it out, reload it, and then shoot the guy dead in the head right away. And so that just – it just adds to that sort of – like when you were talking about like the other – like not necessarily another world, but again like the realism of him being like so human in his actions of killing that it just makes it like feel so real.
I mean, actually not new for him. I mean there's – so much documentation that – have you guys seen Speed? Speed is a
role. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, he's trained so hard for Speed, obviously trained hard for all the Matrix movies. Like, at this point, I feel like he could, like, go to the Navy SEALs and make it pretty far. You know, I mean, that guy has so much physical conditioning and weapons training.
He goes very hardcore for a lot of his movies. Yeah. I mean, he does so much work. He's honestly an underrated, like, quote-unquote method actor. You know, he does so much to get into the mind of his character, you know, like – obviously for John Wick, he's like, this person would be completely trained in all these different forms of martial arts. I got to learn these, you know, I got to make sure that I know what I'm doing so I don't look like a fraud up there on the screen, you know. And it, like you said, it totally transport onto the screen. It's amazing, you know. I mean, going into a little bit more of the technical aspect of it, going beyond like fantasy and reality and stuff like that, you know, the editing of this movie is also so good at creating two different things. It's so good at creating tension, but it's also awesome at creating comedy too. Mm-hmm. I mean, the two big examples that I can think of are when, as far as tension goes, when Viggo is giving the big monologue about who John is, you know, he's like, you can't do anything. You're not going to do anything because you can't do anything. You know, he's Baba Yaga. He's the boogeyman. He's the person you send to kill the boogeyman and all that. He's giving that whole monologue, and then it keeps cutting back and forth between the monologue and him going down into the basement, using the sledgehammer to uncover all of his weapons. It's so good. It just builds so much tension in there. And then for, like, comedy's sake, you know, when what's the scene? Oh, shoot. When John and Miss Perkins are fighting right outside the hotel room, mm-hmm, and inside of his hotel room, they're going back and forth and back and forth, and you hear the phone ringing in the background, and it just keeps cutting to the front desk clerk. He's just silent, waiting on the phone, and then you cut back to it, and it's so loud. I mean, it's great. The editing, I think, is awesome in this movie. How about you guys?
Yeah, the editor, editing is something, actually, I've been recently learning more about. Not so much, like, technical, like, Premiere and stuff, but more of, like, the mindset of an editor. Mm-hmm. And I think... And the mindset of an editor is not necessarily they don't need to know how to press buttons because you have editing tech to do that. The mindset of the editor is understanding the vision of the writers and the directors.
Yeah.
And putting together what they have filmed and created and making that vision available for the audience to see. Because you can't just, you know, cut every clip together and then they'll see it. You have to, like, a story is within the editing, you know? Yeah. And I think... In this instance, the editor really, really understood what was happening, is able to build things up, is able to build things – or is able to let things kind of die down and calm down, and then we're right back into the next beat. Because it is, as we talked about, I think, before, it's a pretty quick movie. It starts off quick. The middle, there's some really quick scenes, but it's able to stop at times to really, like, develop the story.
Yeah, definitely.
And along with that, too, I think it's really cool that, like you said, with the editor being given what to work with kind of thing, the long takes in this movie are just superb.
Oh my gosh!
Especially those in the beginning when the first house break in happens, where it'll be kind of a long take of him, like, just killing one guy and then just kind of moving and then just so seamlessly killing all these men. But again, if you think about the cameraman, it's just the camera's just following him as he goes, especially the scene where there's a wall in between the two guys, if you remember that scene. And so his instincts kicked in and they're both waiting for the other to move, and then he crouches down, the guy shoots, and then he points up, no look, just bang, pegs him kind of thing. And that's just such a great shot of just the camera work there. So there's no need for the editor to really be too, like, cutty with the clips necessarily.
Exactly. Because,
again, like, the long takes really help the movie in that realism aspect.
Definitely, yeah. And it's not like quick cuts and fight scenes and things like that are a bad thing. I mean, if you guys have seen the Bourne movies, you know that it's really fun, you know, to see the quick cuts and stuff like that in the fight, see how intense it can get. But when it comes to a movie like this, that's why the martial arts training for all the actors and all the stuntmen is so important, because if they know what they're doing, the camera can just keep rolling on those long takes. And you were talking about the long takes earlier. It's so seamless. Like, you don't even notice it the first time. Like, on multiple viewings, that's when you start to notice. It's like, oh, this camera isn't cutting, you know? The camera is letting these guys fight, you know?
Yeah.
They're just letting them do their thing, you know? And it looks awesome. It looks so cool.
Well, I think maybe a difference, too, compared to the Bourne movies, is that in the Bourne movies, you know, at any moment in one of those action movies, Matt Damon's character could lose. Like, yeah, he's like a trained – he's a trained, you know, agent. But how it's cut, it's really quick. And at any moment, someone else could have the upper hand. And this, it's like almost at every moment besides towards a climax, John Wick has the upper hand. And you know he's the upper hand. That's established in the
– Definitely.
In the invasion scene. I think that's why those takes are so long, is because it's satisfying seeing him know what the enemy is about to do before they do it.
Definitely. Yeah.
And so it fits the narrative really well.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Do you guys have anything that you want to get to before we go to the categories? Anything else you want to talk about?
No, I think we're good to get to the categories.
Well, just
point.
I don't know if this is one of the categories, but more on the technical side, I mentioned this to you guys earlier. I saw this movie probably like 2016, 2017, so a couple years after it came out, but before I was in college.
Yeah.
And when I was only like beginning you know, diving into filmmaking and whatnot. And the sound design in this movie, it, to this day, is still some of the best I've ever heard. And that That's is great. So hard to accomplish. Like, making the audience aware of multiple things that are happening at a certain time, even if they aren't necessarily on screen, or on screen, like you mentioned the telephone going off. You know, like making the audience aware of different things, who's where, what's being used and all that. It's just really, really well done. That's so hard to do.
It is really hard. It is a really tough thing to get to do, you know.
Yeah, and also on that aspect, like, it's just, I love the sound because you don't notice it.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
Because
exactly.
You're so invested in the movie and it feels so real with the sound. It's like,
yeah,
like you feel like you're in your own house and there are people breaking in. You like, you hear like footsteps over there and then you're like, okay, this like theoretically the camera will move that way because your line of vision will move that way. So kind of like, again, that's sort of the use of the audio really just adds to that sort of realism.
And that's a perfect description of what makes good sound design. It's making the audience aware of that sound with making sure they aren't like attracted towards it or like, you know, break their focus away from what's on like screen, you know?
Yeah.
And that's a perfect description of what makes good audio versus bad audio.
Definitely, definitely. I totally agree with you guys. All right, well, moving on to the categories. The first few ones, just kind of basic, simple ones, you know, for budget and box office numbers, this movie was made for $20 million, and it grossed $86 million worldwide, which seems honestly kind of low. I remember this movie being a much bigger phenomenon when it first came out. I mean, what do you guys – how about you guys?
Well, I think it's one of those movies that's, like, aged like fine wine.
Oh, yeah.
Like, I mean, we talked at the beginning that, like, it doesn't look like it was made almost 8 years ago. And also, it's now garnered this like cult following that over time, you know, I'm sure the post release sales have made up for this kind of thing. It's like I'm sure people have streamed it and bought it so many times over that, you know, I don't remember there being a lot of trailers for this film. I don't remember there being a lot of press for the film when it came out at the time. Now, granted, I was like, what, 14, 15?
Yeah.
So memory may be slipping, but I think it kind of came out of nowhere and since then has gained a lot of recognition.
Definitely.
I think, too, the age, because we mentioned, like you were 14 when it came out kind of thing. And this movie is, like, beyond violent.
Oh,
you know?
Gosh.
Yeah, that is
with like, swear words and stuff. Like, it's just – it's ridiculous the amount of, like, death that happens in the movie. And so I feel that, like, the movie itself may have grossed a little less just because it missed that, like, audience in the way that it's, like, R – rated, like very R-rated movie. Yeah. And so like, again, like when you said with the fine wine, like as we have gotten older, we are starting to appreciate it more because along with the cinematography, that's just stupendous. It's also the movie itself is so much, it's a little more relatable now that we're like older and kind of understand more.
Definitely.
And I, sorry.
No, go.
And
go,
And I know that the R rating pre-Deadpool had a lot more stigma around it.
Yeah.
And I know that after Deadpool has come out, a lot more films have taken advantage of the R rating because of how successful Deadpool was.
Oh, yeah.
Because if a storyline is so engrossing and if characters are really thought out, then people will get over, you know, some F words or, you know, a lot of violence.
Right. Yeah.
Like Logan, I think, is a really good example. that is a violent movie.
Fun fact about that. That was like a first date that I went on with a girl.
Wow.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. And I went into it. I was like, I don't know. I was like 16 at that point. So I like,
How'd
I didn't
you even
really
get in?
I mean, I look older. So I guess.
But I guess they're not checking IDs at that.
No, they don't really care that much. Yeah. But again, like it was such a like, like I got into it and I was like, oh yeah, it's Wolverine, like Hugh Jackman, so hot,
it's a superhero movie.
but then just the whole movie is just so gory.
Oh my god,
crazy.
And
like
that's
even worse
than
John Wick.
And that's what I mean. It's so incredibly violent, but that's not what you're thinking about at the time. You're like, this guy, he has PTSD. He's mentally distressed. He's trying to help this girl. You're not thinking about, holy shit, that guy just got ripped into two pieces.
Yeah,
you know, you're not thinking about that.
You're not thinking like, this is a little over the top.
Right.
Like, you're just so engrossed in the story.
So since John Wick and since Deadpool, that R rating has definitely lost a lot of that stigma. And I think it's being used pretty well.
I think you definitely made a great point with that. Yeah, it's especially like when it comes to the violence in this movie. Yeah, this one is intense, but like, the other sequels, they step it up, man. Like, we were talking before we started recording, but about the pencil kill in part two. I mean, that is brutal to see. And I know you guys haven't seen the third one. Highly recommend you watch it. There's one kill in there. Oh, my God. The first time I saw it, I was like, wow. I mean, like,
how do people think of this kind of thing? Exactly. You know? I mean, lock up whoever wrote that.
I mean, again, like, in the moment, you're not just like, oh, come on, that's like, that's too over the top. But like, right. when you're watching, you're just like, oh my God, that was incredible. So it's awesome. It's amazing. Yeah. Moving on a little bit though, like, we're geeking out over this movie right now.
Yeah, absolutely.
Love this movie so much. The critics are a little bit lower than I anticipated when I looked it up. So obviously, like, we can take these with a grain of salt, obviously. But IMDb, 7.4 out of 10.
Yeah.
Rotten Tomatoes, an 86%.
Yeah.
So Rotten Tomatoes, the much better score that I think. But like, IMDb, 7.4 out of 10. What do you guys think about that? Like, why do you think that is?
I would honestly say like a low 80%, like an 8 out of 10 is honestly pretty fair. So in between those two. I mean, because it is like an engrossing story. It is... you know, Keanu Reeves does really well, but there's definitely aspects of it lacked. And at the end of the day, like, action movies are fun.
Yeah.
But they're not really much more than fun, right?
Right.
You know?
You're kind of supposed to suspend your disbelief.
Right. And this one is a step up from action movies, don't get me wrong. But it is still action. It is still shooting through the nightclub. And that can only be so critically acclaimed,
yeah.
you know?
Yeah.
And I think also the low rating probably could come a little bit from the just... The sheer amount of violence.
Yeah.
Because again, like, you have the first part where it's like there's dialogue and you kind of understand, and then it just cuts, and then there's just violence, violence, violence on violence. And I feel like, as much as watching the movie through and through, it flows pretty well.
Mm-hmm.
But like in hindsight, there's a lot in there, and
I
feel like there's a lot that, like, I don't want to say too much, but I feel like you could get tired of it pretty easily.
It's almost like it's past the shock value. So like,
right.
it shocks you, and then it's like, wait, it's a little more, you know?
Yeah. yeah.
And I mean, I definitely agree with that because, you know, like, if you watch these three movies back to back to back, yeah, it can get a little stale, quote unquote. But I mean, it's still incredible to watch, you know. But like, yeah, it can get a little repetitive. I can kind of see that, though. With this movie specifically, there is one aspect of it that I think could kind of turn some critics off a little bit. I'll get into it in a little bit. But I mean, other than that, though, like we've been saying, you know, you kind of have to suspend your disbelief a little bit with action. It's just supposed to be a fun ride, you know. And I mean, again, this movie is a step up from a lot of action movies. It has a lot of themes. It has a lot of great things behind it, you know. So, I mean, it's not to, like, discredit this movie from all the things that it does right, you know. Awards and nominations, nothing from nobody. I mean, that's no surprise or anything like that. I mean,
the industry, ugh.
There's always talks that people say, I mean, at least that I've heard, that some people believe, you know, like, there should be a, like, stunt recognition kind of award, you know, like at the Oscars or Golden Globes. I mean, I totally am for that. I think it would be great to, because, I mean, it's a very low to the ground kind of part of the film industry. I mean, do you guys agree with that?
Yeah, I mean, the whole awards, like you said, Academy, and I don't know, you sounded like you're kind of joking, but, you know, that's not really a joke.
Yeah.
The awards, it's great when good films receive Best Picture. Moonlight won Best Picture a couple years ago.
Yes.
Top five movies for me. Unbelievable.
Mm-hmm.
But then other movies receive Best Picture that, you know, who cares, you know? And so there either should be a wider amount of awards, like you were saying, or we don't take it that seriously.
Exactly.
This was enjoyable. This was fun. It's better than most action movies. Who cares about the awards?
The true award is that it's remembered.
Absolutely.
The true award is that you're talking about it on the Cinemaniacs, right?
Exactly, exactly. moving on a little bit to production history and the timeline, just kind of talking about how this movie was made. Screenwriter Derek Kolstad began writing the premise and the treatment for the film about a contract killer coming out of retirement for revenge, and he completed the first draft of the script after only a month of writing it. That kind of it's a pretty darn quick amount of time to write a screenplay.
I mean, there isn't very much dialogue to be written, though.
That's very true. It's a lot of this movie goes into like the action and stuff like that. So that's a very good point.
I mean, he's still pinning that action out, though. He's not doing a shot list, but he's still thinking it out.
Oh yeah, definitely. And I mean, like we've been saying, there's like good themes in this throughout as well. So I mean, it's not like these movies are just like straightforward action and stuff like that, and that's all people want to see, you know. I mean, there's good stuff about this screenplay as well. So Keanu Reeves signed on to play in May of 2013. He signed on to play the role, and he was actually really heavily involved with like the script and the storytelling aspects of this film, and it surprised me a little bit, actually. Do you guys know what the original title of this movie was supposed to be?
I do not.
I have no idea.
It's pretty funny. The original title for the movie was Scorn, but it was actually later changed to John Wick because Keanu Reeves loved the title of the character so much. He just loved the name. Yeah. And so it's reported, at least, but he would, like, go around to people when they asked him, like, oh, what are you working on? He would literally say, like, oh, I'm working on a movie called John Wick, even though the movie at the time was called Scorn. Mm-hmm. And so finally producers were just like, all right, yeah, let's just change the name if Keanu likes it. So.
That's really interesting. I don't understand how Scorn would work.
Yeah. I was going to ask, how do you guys feel about that title? Because I'm really glad that it got changed.
I don't understand where that came from.
It's a really strange title, honestly, to me. I mean, the story itself is great, obviously, but, like, I don't understand really, like, the original title behind it, right?
Yeah. I mean, thank Keanu Reeves for that. At least.
Yeah.
Like, I feel like if it's already not doing well, I mean, without the very easy and recognizable name of John Wick, like, you say that anywhere, people are like, oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. Like, even if they haven't seen it, they're still like, yeah.
A lot of people have heard about this movie, you know?
That's the guy in Fortnite, right? Yeah.
I mean, not only for the title that people have to thank Keanu for, they also have to thank him for the directors as well, because Keanu was really the one that heavily, he was the one that really got the directors in the director's chair for this movie. I mean, so directors for this movie, Chad Stahelski and David Leitch. I can't remember how to pronounce his last name.
I think it's Leitch.
Leitch. But yeah, so Chad Stahelski is the only one with the directing credit in this movie, and it's really just because of the Directors Guild of America. Again, more Hollywood stuff. But basically, Chad Stahelski and David Leitch were both co-directors for this movie, and I think they do just a phenomenal job with this movie. Obviously, it was pretty funny though because Keanu worked with them on The Matrix. They were like stuntmen for him, and I believe Chad Stahelski was also his stuntman for Point Break. Have you guys seen Point Break?
I have not.
I think I've seen parts of it. I don't think I've seen all of it. It's on my list though.
So honestly, audience, that's a stay tuned. I want to do that one next semester. That one's incredible. I love it. Patrick Swayze and Keanu.
We'll do our homework. Don't worry.
I'm bringing you guys back for that one.
Oh yeah.
But yeah, Patrick Swayze and Keanu in that movie are absolutely incredible. Highly recommend it. But anyways, so Keanu thought of them immediately for stunt choreography for this movie, but he was actually apparently also secretly hoping that they would want to direct it. So he reached out to them and he basically told them the project, and they were like, this sounds freaking awesome. They went to producers with their own pitch for the movie, their own ideas with it, and producers liked it and gave him the spot for directing. And I think that's just freaking amazing.
That is so just unique too. I mean, never in the industry, like, does that happen. Like,
no.
People are just granted. I guess they're friends with Keanu Reeves, so maybe that helps.
That's Keanu Reeves for you.
Yeah,
you know?
That's true. I kind of thought of that as I was saying that.
I mean, it's a great vision, though, from Keanu, because he knew that, like, only stuntmen could really understand this kind of movie, like how gritty the violence has to be in, and, you know, how quick it's got to move. You know, he knew that the only people who would understand it were stunt guys, you know, and so it's really admirable for him to think of these guys and for them to have such a great vision for it. I mean, I think it's awesome. So. Moving on a little bit, Stahelski and Leitch both drew heavy inspiration from martial arts films, Hong Kong action cinema, and anime, actually, that they both watched a lot when they were younger. And they both actually cited Sergio Leone's The Good, the Bad, and the Ugly and John Woo's The Killer as inspiration for the movie. So just a little bit of insight there. Moving on a little bit, so we'll go ahead and go on to best scene. What do you guys have? Like, do you guys have lists, or do you have a specific favorite one that you want to go with?
I think Ben has something in his notebook.
Yeah, so
it's like 40 pages long.
Man. No, I didn't write a whole paper for this. No, I really love, and I mentioned it earlier, just the back and forth between when the dad again is talking to his son about how he fucked up with It's not what you did, son. It's who you did it to, you know? And so, like, and that automatically sets the stage there of, like, who is this guy? Like, whoa. And then, like, it cuts back and forth with just Keanu Reeves just menacingly, like, bashing into the concrete, like I mentioned before. And it's just such a cool setup for the scene, too. And also a great thing that it's seen throughout the movie is Viggo is – I love his descent into madness.
Oh my gosh.
His character development, you can just see, like, from the first phone call, and he's like I love that scene too, where he's like, he killed he stole his car and killed John Wick's dog, and then he's like, "Oh."
That's one of my favorite lines.
Yes, and then it's just like he just, you can see him drinking more and more, yeah, and smoking more and more, trying to numb this impending doom, yeah, that is, yeah, John Wick. And
oh,
it's
my
just
gosh.
It's just such, it sets such a precedent for all the violence that's to come, because you have that kind of that backing and that feeling of just like, this guy is the guy you send to kill the, yeah, fucking boogeyman. Yeah. You know?
Exactly.
So.
And like by the end, he's just so wasted. Like he's just laughing next, yeah, to the Allstate, oh, yeah, Mayhem guy. The Allstate Mayhem guy is just like, "Anybody have a gun?" And he's just laughing his ass off, yeah, in the back seat. He's like, "All right, good luck, man. You can try."
Yeah. I mean, I definitely thought of that scene as well for like world building and character development, because that's, you know, one of the best ways to develop a character is through other people.
Oh, yeah.
But I mean, I'd be a really bad filmmaking student if I didn't say my favorite scene was probably the best action scene of the 21st century, which is him in that club.
Oh my gosh.
Just,
yeah.
I mean, just the choreography, the shots, it's like perfect. It's like if you're doing a long form action sequence, you're like, all right, let's go watch John Wick and then we'll come back and write it, you know?
Exactly. I mean, it's. Oh, yeah. I friggin' love that scene.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, you put it perfectly. I mean, it's such a unique blend of, you know, combat that we had seen before, but it was more in like Hong Kong action cinema. You know, a lot of American audiences hadn't quite seen combat like this. You know, in a lot of John Woo's movies, he has this,
oh, yeah,
gun fu action. You know, I misspoke last time when I said that gun fu was introduced in John Wick. It was definitely not. John Woo introduced a lot of this type of combat in his movies. You know. For audiences, if you haven't seen his movie Hard Boiled, go watch it. It's incredible. It's one of the best action movies I've ever seen. That's hands down. It's so good.
I will add it to the list.
And I think that's we were talking about Jason Bourne earlier. And since we talked about that, I've been thinking more and more about like different action sequences, like The Hunger Games, almost every superhero movie that's come out. It is a little more. The cuts are faster, but this was one of the first movies that comes to mind. Western movies that come to mind that was like, all right, we're showing this whole fight. We're showing everything. We're not cutting from side to side and,
yeah,
cutting here, showing the hands. And that is, like you said, from like more Hong Kong cinema. And, you know, it could have been a gamble. It's kind of maybe newer to Western audiences by my knowledge, and it could have flopped. It's definitely different than what the norm was.
But it was in the right hands, though.
Oh, yeah.
And so when it's in the right hands and the right actors who know what they're doing, I mean, it just looks incredible on screen.
Oh, yeah.
It looks awesome. Totally agree with you guys on both those scenes. Do you guys have anything else that you want to add to that? You have other scenes? Please introduce more if you'd like.
You know, I honestly, you mentioned a little bit in the fight scene that there with, like, you mentioned color. The color in this movie,
oh, yeah,
is really interesting,
yeah,
because they honestly, along with, of course, the characters as well, they use different colors to signify different characters. So,
yeah,
John Wick throughout the movie is always, and there's a blue shade,
yeah,
that, mm-hmm, you'll see. And then also when they're like the goons and the bad guys, it would usually do a shade of red.
Yeah.
But then also what's really interesting is that they'll have purple too. And purple is when it's like uncertain.
Yeah.
Because like you'll see a lot of times, I can't remember the exact moment in which the scene happens, but like a goon is in the red and then he gets pulled into the blue light and John Wick is there and kills him in the,
oh,
blue,
yeah,
light. So it's kind of like you can kind of like see the flow of that. And when it's purple, especially, like, you don't know what's going to happen. You don't know what the ball is in whose court when it's purple, because it's a combination of the red of the goons and the,
yeah,
blue of John Wick.
Definitely.
Like, you don't know.
Yeah, that's actually really common in all filmmaking, is you essentially sign characters colors. But more and more, it seems like it's being used intentionally.
Yeah.
So like I mentioned Moonlight, you know, he has a different color for every stage of his life. Another film is Knives Out. Each of the characters
We just watched that last week, actually.
Really?
We just covered it.
I like that one, yeah. Each of the character, it's typically in wardrobe, colors representing characters. And a lot of times it's a little more subliminal, a little less. But in Knives Out, it's obvious. It's obvious, you know, what colors represent each character. And in John Wick, they're not hiding it. They're really using it to their advantage rather than just like subliminally putting it in the audience's head, which has been used in the past.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Definitely agree with you guys. I mean, yeah, just the color palette throughout this whole movie is so unique. You know, like you were saying, you know, characters going in between different colors to represent like who's going to be on top. You know,
mm-hmm.
if they go into the blue, you know John's winning. I mean, throughout the home invasion scene, like the whole entire house kind of has a small
blue.
Tint of
blue. Yeah.
It has a tint of blue in it. And so, you know, like, yeah, these guys aren't making it out alive.
He's got his home court advantage.
Exactly.
You know?
John has the home court advantage. It's perfect. That's perfect, yeah. Anything else from you guys for best scene?
No,
I got nothing.
For me personally, just to give a list, this is probably one of the longest lists I've made for this category. Yeah,
such a good movie.
It's such a great movie. Agree with you. Yeah, definitely. The Red Circle nightclub shootout is probably my favorite scene. It's good. It's great. Just some other honorable mentions. I love when Daisy first arrives to John's house and he's reading the letter from his wife. It just breaks my heart every single time. And Keanu is so good in that scene when he just breaks down crying. And it just, it gets me every single time. It's so sad. Another honorable mention, Viggo's monologue introducing John and then John just digging up the weapons and all that.
Right.
One honorable mention for a best line that I didn't write down, but I just love it when he's like, when Yosef is like, who, when he's like talking about who he messed with, he's like, who, that fucking nobody? And he goes, that fucking nobody is John Wick. It like gives me chills every time. And it's so good. And I'm like, oh gosh. The home invasion scene. Love that. I love the cleanup crew that comes after the home invasion scene.
Yes.
I love that scene. It's so funny because it's something that you don't obviously we don't think about it because it doesn't exist, but like that goes into the fantastical elements we were talking about earlier. Like there's just this service that offers to clean up dead bodies if you have them in your house.
And I think the best part too, and I think that builds into the world building too, is that I was going to mention that, is that the whole crime syndicate, like that's like they have a business for that.
Exactly. Yeah. It's just so normalized.
Well, in a world where there's a hotel of assassins, that does make a little sense. You know?
It's so good though. One person we haven't talked about in this next scene I'm going to get to, Marcus's death. Willem Dafoe, God bless him.
Yeah.
I freaking love Willem Dafoe so much.
Great actor.
Oh, really my gosh. Good. He's just so many. He's great literally in everything.
This is kind of a basic pick, but my favorite movie of his is easily The Lighthouse.
The Lighthouse, yeah.
Basic pick, I know, but my Lord. Because I think the last I'd seen of him was like Spider-Man, so it's just totally different.
It's what a lot of us had previously seen him in.
He's good in American Psycho, too.
I'm hoping to God that he's in the new Spider-Man
movie.
I think he is.
It's already,
He is.
I saw the trailer with the design of his Green Goblin suit, but I didn't know, like...
I think they've already said it.
They've confirmed that he's the actor.
Fucking,
thank God.
Sorry. What's his name?
Tom Holland?
Yeah. I think he did some, like, Q&A and said, like, he really enjoyed working with Dafoe. I don't know if he was supposed to say that, but who knows.
God bless Tom Holland and his spoiler-filled mouth. Yeah. I love it. Oh, man. I love Willem Dafoe so much, though. Yeah. And then, just the final shootout scene at the helipad, the Allstate mayhem guy just going crazy. He's just like, does anybody have a gun? And then as soon as he tries to kill John Wick, he just rams him with a car.
I like it, too, when he's getting out of the car or, like, he crashes into the car or something. And he's like, what the fuck is this guy's problem?
Yeah.
That's so real. I feel like if I was in that position, I'd be like, why is this guy doing this?
I feel so bad for that actor because literally that entire scene, all I can think of is I hope you're protected from mayhem like this, man.
He's in Law and Order. He's pretty good in it.
He's in a lot of great stuff. He's a great actor. He's so good.
But for me, unfortunately, I think thinking about it, that set piece is about where I start to get a little, the action started to feel a little stale at that point.
The
especially
helipad.
Coming off the nightclub. I mean, you're following up, the best action that we're going to see in a while. So it was a little stale. I think the humor really helped it.
Yeah.
Definitely a little slower for me.
Yeah, I agree. It seems a little slow. It's only an hour 40, but it does seem like it's kind of dragged on a little bit. So I kind of...
Towards the end, yeah.
I agree. But I still love it. It's great. Moving on, best line. What do you guys have for your favorite lines in this movie?
I think we kind of used a lot of them in the last one, but
it's totally fine.
Again, with the phone call
that's
is classic. The police officer, of course, going the "you working again" kind of thing.
Yeah.
Oh yeah.
And then just overall, just kind of. We haven't talked about it yet, but John Wick's scene where they capture him and have him in the chair.
Yeah.
I was thinking about that. Yeah. When you're thinking about best scene, I almost brought that up, but I could not say the club.
Yeah, it's like a real bump in the movie because I feel like you have the first part of dialogue and then you have lots of action. He gets caught. And then you really get to see more of the reason of his motivation.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And again, I can't quote it off the top of my head, but Keanu Reeves is just like at the end, it's like, you could die along with him, kind of in that way.
Oh, yeah.
It's just like, it's so intense in such a, he's so calm and collected throughout the movie, but then he just breaks in that one kind of scene.
That's where he breaks down.
But then he comes right back after he gets that chance from mm-hmm. the help of the sniper.
Willem Dafoe.
Yeah, Willem Dafoe. So yeah.
Along with that, and then a couple other smaller things in the action set pieces, it's like a really nice job of showing that he is retired.
Yeah.
Like there's a couple scenes in the nightclub where he's a little slow. He almost gets shot. He gets, you know, he's blindsided. And you have to think, like, you know, if this guy was in his peak, that would not happen to him.
No.
He wouldn't break like that and kind of lose it.
Right.
He wouldn't get blindsided. And I think that's another thing they did really well at essentially not having to build from ground up is showing these very little things that you don't notice until after the fact. And it's like, yeah, he's retired. This isn't him in peak shape.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's something that they don't really talk about much. But I feel like they talk about it a little bit more in other movies, you know. But yeah, you definitely agree with that. You know, he's not at the prime of his career or anything. But if he was, you know, there'd be a lot more dead people in this movie.
And it's almost like he's willing himself to just like avenge the dog because he's not in the peak. You know, he really has no reason to be doing this.
No.
He needs to get out of his system, like you were saying earlier.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. For me personally, yeah, like we said, we've mentioned a lot of these lines, just some other ones that I think are great. Yeah, that same scene where he's tied up and they're interrogating him. I just love it. Yeah, he's losing his mind. He just keeps going, people keep saying I'm back, and I haven't really had an answer.
Yeah,
but now, yeah, I'm thinking I'm back. Like, it's so badass, and I love it. I mean, another badass line that I love is Marcus right before his death scene when he's getting tortured and he's getting beaten up and all that. And then Viggo says something along the lines. He's like, you go out on my terms and stuff like that.
It's like,
and
no, I go out on mine. And
exactly.
Then he stabs him. Oh,
exactly. Yeah. And he's like, no, I go out on my own terms. And he like grabs a gun and he shoots a couple people before he ultimately ends up dying. But gosh, it's so badass and I love it. Again, God bless Willem Dafoe. He's so good. One final one. It's kind of a culmination of different lines, but I love like all the lines that happen like post fight scene. Like we were talking about, you know, like the police officer working again and all that, you know. There's also one where he gets done with a fight in the hallway, and then one guy comes out into the hallway. He's just like, I think he's like, evening, John. And he just turns around. He's like, evening, Harry. You know, the one guy that like he hires to watch after, what's her name? Oh, shoot, I forget. But the girl that goes to kill John and all that.
And
I love that.
And I think that's a really good example of what I was trying to articulate earlier, is that, like, he's able to step out from the killer and be, like, a genuine guy, like a pretty good, like, community-driven guy. Because it's almost like Batman. He has his, like, mask, which is John Wick, and then he's also just, like, a normal guy. He kills when he needs to kill. You know, he's not ruthless. Or he is ruthless, a killer, but he's not, like, a ruthless human.
Yeah.
And you both saw me move my hands over there. I really want to talk about this, but the one scene where it's like he seems so human is when he sneaks. I forget if it's right before the club fight scene or something.
Yes, he
sneaks up on the guy, points a gun to his head, and he's like, I forget exactly what he says, but I know at the end he says, "Why don't you take the night off?"
Because
the guy,
I love that.
The guy subtly tells him, if you actually listen, what he says something in Russian again. I don't know Russian off the top of my head, obviously.
Oh, come on,
but
that was a prereq.
Sorry.
Come on, man.
But he basically tells him how many enemies are in the building, kind of thing, and because of that, John Wick, the character, lets him off easy.
He says 20.
Like, why don't you take the night off? You know, like, just go ahead. I won't kill you tonight. Yep. You did. Thank you. I appreciate you.
Yeah, I think he says like 20. He's like, you lost weight, you know? And he goes, I think I lost like 26 kilograms or something like that.
Yeah,
that's his hint to him. He's like, yeah, there's like 26 guys in there.
Yeah, he's not bloodthirsty.
Exactly.
You know? He doesn't.
Tactical.
He doesn't like get off on killing people. You know?
I love that scene that you brought that up. Yeah, it's such a clever scene, but it's also just so funny because it seems like so real. It's just like, hey, how are you? He's like, I'm doing pretty good, man.
With a gun pointed to the back.
Exactly. He's like, why don't you go ahead and take the night off? Okay, thank you. Okay, moving on. I think we all agree. Best character, John Wick. Keanu Reeves is incredible. So good. I mean, again, special shout out to Marcus. I love Viggo. He's so good. I mean, everyone does incredible with the roles that they have in this movie. So... moving on a little bit to some behind-the-scenes knowledge and fun facts. We talked a lot about this, Keanu Reeves being heavily committed to embodying the character. He did a lot of training and things like that for this movie, not only in fighting, but he also learned proper weapon handling and firearm training.
Mm-hmm.
And apparently he also learned how to safely drift cars while also like simulating how to shoot a gun out the window. So like anytime you see him like drifting a car or something like that is most likely Keanu Reeves actually doing that,
you
know?
Which is just Like, so, like, if I, like, of course, like, I would like to, like, not be an actor.
Yeah.
But, like, that little part of me that's, like, starting to, like, experience that, like, if I could just, like, do that. You know, like, I'm doing a role and I just have to learn some just obscure, like, learn to play the banjo or something.
Exactly.
Like, just Keanu does it. And I feel like he's such a multifaceted human being that's just so good at it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It makes him so good.
In my head, I like to think that they're like, all right, Keanu, for this scene, you know, we'll have a stunt. Don't you worry about it. He's like, no, I'm going to learn to drift a car and shoot a gun out the window.
So you talked about speed earlier. Yeah. Just a quick side story for that. Do you guys remember the scene where he jumps from the Jaguar into the bus?
Oh, yes. God, how could I forget?
So Jan de Bont, the director of that movie, he told him, he's like, okay, we're going to have the stunt guy come in and do this and that. And then Keanu literally looked at him. He's like, no, I'm going to do that.
Yeah.
I'm doing that. So, like, when you see him jump from the Jaguar onto the bus, that's actually Keanu freaking Reeves jumping
it's
onto
so believable,
a moving
too.
Bus going 50 miles an hour.
Badass.
I mean, it's so cool. Just going off of that a little bit, 90% of the stunts are all Keanu in this movie. All Keanu. According to the director and Keanu himself, 90%. All of him, like everything you see John Wick doing, 90% of it is all him, and it's just incredible, so cool. Go ahead.
Yeah, and also I just take a little break from the violence here. I got a little fun behind the scenes info that I found.
Yeah.
There was no animals harmed in the making of the film.
Yep.
But so the scene in which the dog is crawling up to John Wick as it's dying, all sad. The truth behind it is that the dog, they had a hard time getting the dog to lie down.
Really?
because it was so excited and having such a good time. So it caused Keanu to break character so often, because here he is like acting that this dog is dead and dying, but the dog is just like really happy. And it's such a cute beagle anyway. So it says, yeah, it's just a little bit of,
I did not know that.
Yeah. A little fun fact for you. There.
That's really funny. That's really funny. Moving on a little bit with that, just continuing Keanu fucking Reeves. I mean, he's incredible. So the Red Circle nightclub fight scene, he apparently learned all the choreography in one day.
Really?
To help, like, just to help the production keep a steady schedule and all that, to help keep it moving. He learned all the choreography in one freaking day, when it normally takes, like, weeks and sometimes even months to learn and practice and rehearse choreography. That's just incredible to me, I think.
Yeah.
I mean, it's unreal.
And I feel like that's a testament to him, too, with like, speed and the Matrix. It's just, like, he's just so good at it.
And he's such a good human being, too. And I think that's why so many people love him, because he's just such a great guy. I mean, there are videos all over the internet of him literally just being a good person, you know? I mean, there's a lot of memes about him, which are great, you know? But, I mean, there's also so many videos, you know, like, he'll just give his seat up for somebody on the subway. I mean, he's just an absolutely amazing human being, I've heard. Like, just in all accounts I've heard, he's just an absolutely extremely humble guy. So I think that's another great reason why so many people love him. So moving on, we've talked a little bit about it, but do you guys have any specific nitpicks that you want to talk about just about with the movie? Just it's not like it's necessarily bad or anything. It's just like something, you know, just to kind of.
Yeah, I mean, what I already said about some of the action sequences. And then in parts, it feels like some other characters, their development is kind of lacking. So the character of John Wick is developed so well. The antagonists are developed pretty well, in my opinion. And then some others, like Willem Dafoe's character, it's like emotional when he dies and he's a big help, but it's like, all right, it kind of feels expendable to me in some times. That's natural. That happens a lot. But
yeah.
I just feel like I was kind of set up for failure when I cared so much about John Wick, and I was it's like my mind expected to care about every character.
Mm-hmm.
So I feel like, I don't know. I don't know if they could have done anything differently. That may just be, you know. That happens.
And also along with that, the son of Viggo, like, I mean, he's obviously set up as a dick in the beginning. Yeah. And like, mm-hmm. I like to think of like him as a fake mobster.
Yeah.
Because he's like the son of this big guy who's like on top of everything. So he's trying to emulate and be all tough and stuff.
Right.
But like they don't really give him like screen time of him just being like real, just not, there's no substance to him besides the fact that he's just scared.
Yeah.
You know, and I feel like I wish that there could have been a little bit more with his character and kind of why he really is the way that he is.
Yeah.
And I mean, of course, you can't give screen time to everybody, and he's obviously like a motivation for John Wick.
He's just a medium to get to.
Yeah. Like he's a plot device. So it's, I mean, in the end, it sucks. But I mean, I feel like a little character development there would have been cool.
I get what you're saying though, because at the gas station, it's like he just comes out of nowhere. Like,
yeah,
he's just like, oh, I'm a once again, alternate universe. We don't have people interacting this, but I personally, I've never. Just randomly been a dick to someone in the gas station. I've never had someone be a dick to me in a gas station out of nowhere.
It's nice car.
Yeah.
I'm going to steal it later.
I get he's rich, whatever.
Everything
probably.
Has a price, bitch. Yeah. But I definitely get what you're saying, though. With this movie, I think if it had the same formula that some of the other movies had, because this movie, like I said, it's only about like an hour 40. The other ones are like two hours and 10 minutes long, you know? So I think if they had that same formula, you know, as the other movies had, I think they definitely would have tried to flesh out these characters a little bit more, you know, give a little bit more screen time to these guys, you know. But, I mean, again, it was honestly, like, for what it is, a relatively kind of low-budget movie, kind of.
That is low-budget.
But, I mean, again, doing everything that they have with all the material that they are given, you know, and I think I would have liked to see a little bit more, but I definitely get what the decisions that they made, though.
Well, I mean... You're certainly not wrong that they would have had more time to flesh out characters, but I feel like it not being formulaic, as we were talking about at the top, is like why part of the some of the success like can be attributed to.
Yeah,
is its differences, honestly.
Yeah,
and I think also building off of both of those things, where it's like not filling the mold, and also with talking about the development of the Viggo's son, the end scene when he dies. Like, John Wick doesn't even give him a chance to say the one line.
Oh, yeah.
Like he's chasing him after he gets everybody. And then it's just like he gets him in, like, the chest or the leg or something, and he stumbles over, and he barely gets out the sentence. It was just a fucking dog, and then he just shoots him. Like, it doesn't even get the dog out.
Yeah.
And just comeuppance, just right there. Yeah. And that's so different. And
it
I
is.
Feel like... Like, or it's like any last words kind
of
thing.
He's not standing there like shaking.
No. He's a trained killer on a mission, and he just completed his mission. Yeah.
Exactly. It's such a badass moment, though. But, like, it's very different, but it's so cool, though. Because, again, it's something that we hadn't quite seen before, you know? It's not like the end of Die Hard where, you know, Alan Rook is like, yippee-ki-yay.
Yeah,
exactly. You know?
Yeah.
And he's, like, mimicking him, you know?
Best Christmas movie.
Well, I mean, think...
Favorite movie of all time, the same.
Think if you were watching that movie, and then at the end, when he's over... What the hell is the antagonist's name? Viggo. When he's standing over Viggo, imagine if he had like said like any last word. You would be like, what the hell? This is not the same guy. You know, so it works so well. A lot of other films kind of change their characters to fit some things, and it kind of takes you out of it a little bit.
Yeah, I mean, if it was something like that, you know, like any last words or anything like that, you know, like that's when it would turn to kind of like the 80s action movies, a little bit more cheesy, you know, the... Let off some steam, you know. Like
say hello to my little friend.
Yeah, I mean, it would kind of turn to a little bit of that, but I love the choices that they made with that, and I think it's great, you know. I mean, even the end when Viggo dies, he's just like, be seeing you, John. Like, he knows that he's dead, and that's it. He's like, yep, be seeing you, and then he leaves.
It fits so well.
It's great. For me personally, with nitpicks, the only thing, it's a cliche in a lot of action movies, and this movie is also a victim to it, but... Realistically, I mean, again, it is a fantastical movie, you know, a lot of fantastical elements, but if it's sticking to the realism, Viggo and the Allstate Mayhem guy should have just killed him outside the church when he gets hit with the car and he gets knocked out. Like, that's when they really should have just killed him, you know? I mean, instead of, like, kidnapping him and taking him to the warehouse and all that, even though I love that scene, love all those scenes, they're great, you know? If we're, like, sticking to realism, you know, the only nitpick is that it's like, why didn't you just kill him there?
I think
that's it.
When we were talking about the ratings, that's like kind of what I think we were talking about. It's at the end of the day, it is still an action movie, and action movies to function have to have some things that are really not going to be that.
Yeah.
It's going to take you out for a second and be like, what? That doesn't make sense. But it's okay because then he's captured and it's really enthralling. So that's kind of, I think, what we already talked about.
Definitely. Okay, so just some final questions before we get to the end here. How excited are you guys for this next movie coming up in the franchise? There is absolutely confirmed a fourth movie coming up in May of 2022. What do you guys think about that?
I'm going to have to see the third one really fast before.
Yeah.
But, I mean, if it's anything, I've heard pretty good things about the third one. But if it's anything like the other two, I hope that they again, and it's pure its form. It is an action movie.
Yeah.
But like again, more character development is always great.
Yeah. Definitely.
And with Keanu, I mean, so much success.
Definitely.
So I haven't seen the third either. The first two, you know, sequels are hard to do, especially when a franchise becomes popular quickly. I was pleased with the sequel. Haven't seen the third one. Heard it's good. The more they make, the more room for error there is for it to really fall flat. I'm obviously hoping for the best, but, you know, obviously they need to make money, their studio. But I would think that they should probably end it kind of soon and let it age really well as it has.
Yeah.
But I'll definitely watch the third one, watch the fourth one comes out, hoping for the best.
Mm-hmm. I really like the third one. I think it's great, you know. Out of the trilogy, I think it's the weakest, quote unquote, if that's how you want to say it, you know. I think it's great still. It's still a very, very, very good movie. It's like, just compared to the first two, I think it's probably the weakest, but I still really like it. So I'm really excited about it, as long as, you know, Keanu's still in the main role, as long as the same guys are still behind the camera, you know, they have a vision for it. All right, cool. I want to see what that is, you know. I want to see what how these fights can get more elaborate, you know. And so, going a little bit more off of that, I don't know if you guys have heard, but there is now a spinoff film series that's going to be happening with this, starring Ana de Armas from Knives Out and, you know, War Dogs. You know, she's great. So she's actually going to be the lead in a new spinoff series called Ballerina. Okay. What do you guys think about that? Because personally, I think it's going to be great. I mean, especially if she's already kicking ass alongside James Bond in the latest James Bond movie, I think she's going to be great in it. Right. So.
All right. And I think that, I mean, it's a spinoff, so do you know, is it in the same universe kind of thing?
I believe it is supposed to be in the same universe, yes.
Okay. Because I think that, again, that's a good way to, I would prefer that over like John Wick 4, 5, 6,
agree,
you know?
100%.
Like make a new spinoff series and then have them meet kind of thing.
Yeah.
Like that, like, would be awesome, like, I feel, rather than just keeping like the John Wick
making the John Wick universe, you know.
Make them, like kind of like Marvel has done it. You know, where they, like, they introduce all these characters in their own movies, and then they combine them all together, and the chemistry just works. Like,
yeah, the John Wick Avengers.
The John Wick Avenger,
yeah. Yeah, I mean, maybe he, like, retires for good, something happens, and he's like, all right, you go do it. Like, I'm done. Like, I'm actually done. You go do it, but if you need my help, I'll help you, you know.
And then he comes in at the end with, like a big swoop in.
Maybe.
John Wick.
I mean, I think it'd be incredible. I love this, and I guarantee that's probably what they're going to try and do with it, you know, because it's like, I mean, obviously the Avengers are very action-filled, obviously, but they're obviously, we know them as superhero movies. So, I mean, an action-based cinematic universe is something so unique, you know, and I think it would be so cool to see.
Man, those are hard to – sorry to cut you off.
No,
you're
good.
Those are hard to do. I mean,
they are.
DC is pretty much all but failed. That like, dark universe they were trying to do with Tom Cruise, that fell flat. I think the only successful one has been Marvel, so.
We actually talked
more
about
room
that.
More for error, unfortunately.
Yeah, we actually talked about the dark universe earlier in our episode about the Invisible Man and how that was related to the dark universe.
Yeah.
So, yeah, listeners, check that one out if you haven't listened to that
one. That's the best dark universe movie, though.
Yeah. It's Invisible Man is incredible.
It's shockingly good, because going in, just no expectation. Like, what the hell is
it's
this?
It's great. Oh, my gosh.
The Mummy's awful. Don't watch the mummy.
Don't watch the mummy.
Just watch John Wick like 72 or whatever.
And so one more question about the John Wick universe. There is also a prequel TV show that's going to be coming out called The Continental. Have you guys heard about that?
I have.
I don't think I have.
What are your thoughts on that?
I think that it'll be interesting to see what they do in that, because I feel that we already were kind of introduced to John in this kind of like infamous sort of hitman, all world kind of way. But then we were, by the writer's design, we were put on his side.
Yeah.
So I think that by seeing a prequel, it would be interesting to see, like, if we sympathize more with the people that he's chasing, kind of thing.
Yeah.
Because I feel like he has like the potential to be like a pretty bad guy. Especially with like what he's talked about, where he's like, in the beginning of the movie, where he's like, the Vigo talks to his son about how he built the buddies he buried that day.
Yeah,
kind of thing.
You know, everyone has, like, a mother and a father. You know?
Yeah. And so, like, I feel like if they do something, like, it'll be interesting to see what direction they go with. So, I'm gonna wait and see and not make any too lavish predictions, but
yeah.
I'd honestly be interested in seeing him going in, like, kind of a negative kind of way, him like an anti-hero kind of thing.
Yeah.
I don't mean to sound so pessimistic. Every time you've brought up something, I feel like I've sounded pessimistic, but besides what you just said, Ben, about maybe painting him in a negative light, I hadn't thought about that. That sounds interesting.
Yeah.
But my thought was, we don't need to know anything else about him.
That's true.
Part of what makes him so, part of what makes that character so great is that you can kind of paint the picture in your head what he did before, and that doesn't really matter. Okay, he was a killer, whatever. He got hired, he did what he had to do, whatever. I feel like there's not much more to it, but what's happening right now is that he's like, things are driving him to come back to that lifestyle, which is probably pretty hard on the mental, hard on the physical. And that's what's important. That's what matters. Not so much necessarily just him in prime condition running through bad guys.
Yeah, and also like that's like Obi-Wan Kenobi in the in the fourth movie. Like in the very first Star Wars as it came out is this old hermit that looks like when he's talking to Luke and he's like,
hello there.
I haven't gone by that name in a long time. You know, and so you're just like you're so mystified with what it could be. But then of course we got the prequels and now we're getting another Kenobi show, which I'm excited for. But I feel like too much information could honestly be a bad thing, like you said.
Yeah. For me personally, the first two that I mentioned, you know, the fourth film in the John Wick series, the ballerina, the spinoff, I'm excited about those. This, though, the Continental, I'm scared for. I'm excited for it, but at the same time, I'm very, very nervous about, like, the potential retcons that it's going to have with the other movies. Because for me, it's like the first three movies have all done such a great job at building this world and creating this environment that they don't tell us too much about, you know? And that's okay, personally, for me. Like, it's okay to, like, leave John's past a mystery and things like that to me. Like, granted, I think the series is going to focus more on the actual Continental itself, you know, and the management behind it, you know.
That would be awesome. That would be so cool.
That's
seeing
what I
different
think
assassins
gonna
come in and out, seeing how the, you know, obviously we saw the management and the people that work there are pretty qualified, seeing what would be there about. That would be awesome.
Like, that's what I think they're going to focus on, you know. My whole worry is just, like, you know, the retcons to the original movies, you know, just like they're going to be like, oh, you know, they're going to try and explain something, you know, that, like, doesn't quite make a lot of sense, you know, about the whole world when the original trilogy did such a good job with explaining it, you know. So, I mean, I'm a little skeptical, but I am excited about it. I'm still gonna go see it. I think it'll be good, but you know.
You said it's a TV show?
It is. It's gonna be a prequel TV show. And then Ballerina is gonna be a spin-off series of films and all that. So
is it gonna be like a miniseries, do you think? Or maybe just like do you think like an episodic?
I think it's supposed to be, just like a miniseries right now. You know, so
a little higher production value, maybe.
Exactly. So two more questions for you guys. I talked about this a little bit before we walked in. Is this the best John Wick movie so far? You guys have only seen the first two, so what do you guys think, though? Do you think this one's better than the second, or what do you think?
I think it's better than the second. Yeah. I mean, you can't – it's just the only instance in which the second one is better is Empire Strikes Back. And so it's like it's just the lack of, like, world, and then as you see the world kind of come together, and then the action, it just – and then how it ties in a nice, neat bow, you know?
Yeah.
It's just all-encompassing, and it's really good. And, I mean, I love – the second one's also really good.
Yeah.
I like that they brought the pencil back. I think that was – it was fun to see that as gory as it was. And then the third one I've heard was okay, but, I mean, I doubt that it matches the first one in quality. Mm-hmm. But just, again, like the first one I think is definitely the winner.
Yeah, I definitely agree. I think a lot of action movies, the reason maybe they fall flat on some sequels – is because the first one is carried by novelty. It's like a really interesting new characters, new action, whatever. And the second one's like, oh wait, that was the same shit. I don't really care about the novelty.
Yeah.
The John Wick, the second one, it's able to recognize that and kind of craft a different film that has other aspects of it that are enthralling. And once again, I haven't seen it in a while. I should probably rewatch it. But the novelty is definitely an issue. And I think, you know, despite it being a good film, the novelty still isn't there because it's not the first one. And so I do think the first is better.
Yeah. I go back and forth in my brain. It's like playing tennis. I mean, it's so hard for me to choose which one I like better, the first or the second. I mean, as of right now, because I just recently watched it, I think I would put the first one on top. But the second one is so freaking good, though. It's great. I mean, the action scenes in that one are just phenomenal as well. I mean, just as good, maybe, if not, some of them might even be better than the first one, honestly. I mean, it's so good. It's great. Okay, so one last question before we start wrapping up. Is this Keanu Reeves' best performance? Is this the best Keanu Reeves movie?
Nah.
No.
I'd say no.
Just like that.
Yeah, no.
I thought this was going to be a little bit more of a debate.
I mean, he's just been in so much.
Yeah.
And, like, and I don't know if you guys have seen Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure.
Yeah, funny.
Not that that was a very good film, but again, just like his...
Definitely an example of how wide his range
yes,
is.
Yes, yeah,
the Grim
yeah.
Reaper, dude.
Excellent. Yeah. No, but the just... I feel that... And I don't want to put on, like, the best movie, but I just... The Matrix, for me, is Keanu.
Yeah.
Like, that's just his movie.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah. how he like, just kind of, like, just all-encompassing... character thrown into this world, blue mm-hmm. pill, red pill, all that. It's just like if he did not do The Matrix, I would say that John Wick is probably it would be probably one of, if not the best movie that he's been a part of.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I don't know if I can just choose one. The reason Speed came to mind is because as of right now, I think that may be my favorite he's been in.
Yeah.
I just rewatched The Matrix a couple weeks ago for. One of my classes, we have to write like a paper each week.
Uh-huh.
And I love it, but the second or the third or fourth watch through at that point, because I just saw it earlier this year as well, I was like, I kind of fell out of love with it.
Uh-huh.
And maybe that'll happen if I watch Speed again anytime soon. But I don't know. Recently, I've been thinking, and I've been watching Speed clips. That's heavy on the mind. I don't know if I can choose one, but as of right now, that's probably my favorite by him.
No, honestly, I honestly agree with you. For me personally, I kind of like his stuff in the early 90s a little bit more than The Matrix. I love The Matrix. The Matrix is great. I think it's awesome. You know, Keanu is incredible in it. But honestly, for me, in terms of like his action ability, there's nothing like him in the early 90s. When he's in Point Break, again, you guys definitely need to check that one out. I mean, if you love Speed, you'll love Point Break.
Yeah,
Speed. I agree with you. I think Speed might be my favorite one because, I mean, I watched that one when I was a kid, you know? Yeah. I mean, I probably shouldn't have, but I mean...
It's definitely a little... It's less violent. So
it is.
It's more
it
accessible.
And so, I mean, and just the premise of it is so good, I think.
Yeah, it's terrifying.
Keanu is awesome in it. I mean, Dennis Hopper's incredible. Sandra Bullock is just amazing. I mean, everything about that movie, I think I just love so much, you know? I love John Wick, you know? For me, I think John Wick might be a close second to, like, all of his filmography, and then The Matrix, honestly, for me personally, would be third. But again, I love The Matrix. I think The Matrix is incredible.
I think I'm just a little biased.
Really? Oh, no.
Yeah, actually, my favorite is Cyberpunk.
Oh. Come on.
There's one Keanu movie that Pete Davidson talks about in an episode of Hot Ones, and it's a movie called Knock Knock. I haven't seen it, but like Pete Davidson does an impression of Keanu, and it's just hilarious. Like one line apparently in that movie is like, "What did you expect? It was free pizza or something like that." And I'm like, that just sounds incredible.
That had a little Scooby Doo to it.
Yeah,
exactly.
Man,
yeah, he did.
Free pizza, man.
I don't know. I haven't seen it, but God, it sounds hilarious though. Like I don't think it's supposed to be funny, but I've heard it's really funny. But anyways, okay. So final question for you guys: what is your favorite part about this movie? Why do you keep coming back to it? What do you think it is about this movie that just makes you want to come back and rewatch it?
I think just how it gets you, how it gets you feeling, you know? Like it's not just of course there's action and you feel suspense and you feel like the awesomeness, but then you also get the human side of it.
Yeah.
Which is such a nice touch to have in this action heavy movie, that you have this sort of real sort of people in they're living and they've experienced tragedy and they're experiencing tragedy. And so it's such a good movie in that respect for me. That I'm just like, people, man, you know?
I think for me, it kind of scratches that like guilty pleasure need itch. Not saying this is a guilty pleasure. I think this is a legitimately good movie.
Oh yeah.
But for me, whenever I see these movies like The Expendables, or I just watched The Meg like a couple weeks ago.
Oh my God.
Or like The Transformers, like I want to like them. Because, you know, action is fun, but it's just like, that sucks. Like, it's so bad.
That's exactly how I felt about The Meg. Sorry, go ahead.
And then John Wick, like, has that action and has that, but it's also, like, legitimately good and it's just likable. And so I think that it, like, takes that need or that want for me to like these bad movies and mixes it with a really good, like, performance and writing. And I'm like, oh, wow, that's like, I can actually enjoy that now.
You know? Exactly. Totally agree with you guys. Everybody is at 100% in this movie. They're at the peak of their powers.
Yep.
Everybody is just doing what they know best, and they are working so hard at it. You know, the stunt coordinators, the filmmakers, the actors, everybody's doing everything so well, and they put it together so well. And I just think it's, honest to God, we said it earlier, probably one of the best, if not the best, action movie of the 21st century. It's unlike anything that, like I said, American audiences.
It may not even be close either.
Unlike anything that American audiences have ever seen before. And again, if you want to watch a lot of things that are similar to John Wick, please check out John Woo's movies. I mean, his filmography when he was making Hong Kong action cinema, it's just, it's exactly like John Wick. It's so good. I mean, the violence in those movies is so creative, and the choreography is just, again, it's exactly how you would see John Wick, and it's great. So check out his movies if you haven't seen them in the audience. I mean, it's wonderful and it's awesome, and I think that's why this movie works so well too. So is, yeah. Go ahead. Did somebody say?
You should definitely do an episode on The Meg. I mean, just top tier movie.
I mean, it's
9 out of 10 stars.
Big,
I mean,
shark.
Spoiler alert, when the second Meg comes, oh my lord. It's a plot twist of the century, man.
Gotta be honest, I saw it twice in the theaters.
No. One time for each Meg.
First time I saw it with my buddies. The second time my cousins wanted to go see it, and so my grandma was like, can you take them? Maybe. I'm like, all right, sure. I'll watch it again.
God, that movie.
It's so weird, but oh god, it was bad. But like, I had a good time watching it.
Yeah, I had the flu like 2 weeks ago, and I was just flipping to the channels, and that was on like TNT or something before like a basketball game, maybe. I can't remember. And I was like, I have nothing else to watch. I'm just gonna watch this. And
why not?
Oh man, I think I regret it. I think it made me worse.
Wasting time.
Yeah, I think it made me much worse.
Oh my gosh, that's incredible. All right, well, before we wrap, is there anything else you guys wanted to discuss? Is there anything you wanted to bring up? Anything at all?
I feel like we covered it like pretty much front to back.
Yeah, I got nothing.
I think so too.
Great movie.
Yeah.
Awesome, awesome movie. Go check it out. If you haven't seen it, if you listen to this and you haven't seen it, go watch it, man. All right, well, that's going to do it for us here on the Cinemaniacs. Big thanks to Andrew Briggs, our producer, and IUS TV for giving us a platform to produce this show. Ben, Kyle, thank you guys so much for being on the show. I really, really appreciate it. You guys were great.
Yeah, thank you for having us.
This was fun.
Oh, man. Okay, thank you guys so much for tuning in to the latest episode of the Cinemaniacs. And before we go, we'll go ahead and tease the next movie for next week. Next week, we are finally closing out the first half of our season. Now that Thanksgiving is over and done with, we are getting into the Christmas spirit. In our next episode, we take a look at the Chris Columbus Christmas classic that has one of the most troubled productions in film history. With an 8-year-old boy in the leading role, an Oscar-winning actor in the supporting role, an all-time great writer behind the screenplay, and a Christmas-obsessed director behind the camera, and an all-time composer creating the beautiful score, this film set out to become a staple of the holiday season, and it succeeded with flying colors. We'll take a look at that film next week, and until then, I'm Jack Lindner. Thanks so much for listening. Happy Thanksgiving, and we'll see you guys next time on the Cinemaniacs.